106.6. Okay, that was Propaganda with Heaven Give Me Words. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go there now! Well, not just yet, but, you know, have a listen to the show first. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. Okay, starting in the show this week, the first hour is all about films. We start off with a review of Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington in Safe House at the Cinema. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then we have the new cinema releases out this Friday, including 21 Jump Street and The Devil Inside. And also new DVD releases, including The Decoy Bride and Twilight Breaking Wind Part 1. Or something like that, anyway. So we started with Safe House at the Cinema with Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds, which does have rather a very safe script. I mean, Safe House is the kind of film where, for anyone who's seen the trailer, you can simply check your brain in at the door. It's not really a film about rocket science. Matt Weston, Ryan Reynolds, is a CIA agent who spends many dull days monitoring cameras in a safe house in Johannesburg with no house guests, so to speak. That is until the biggest baddie of them all is ushered in. Enter Tobin Frost, Denzel Washington, who's handed himself into the authorities after a shady deal causes him to be tailed by some grumpy-looking baddies wanting to pop a cap in his bottom. Led by a chap called Fargus, played by a guy called Fares. Strange name. Anyway, you know he's evil because he never smiles and he has a beard. Now, despite Frost being accompanied by many CIA guys, led by Robert Patrick as Daniel Kiefer, and who'd have thought that anyone could match the might of the T-1000? Well, Mr. Patrick didn't have his metal exoskeleton on this day because they're overpowered by an appearance from Vargas and co, causing Weston to take Frost out of the building, commandeer a car and drive at breakneck speed until they can get clear of evil, with the intention of getting to a new safe house. But in getting from A to B, they have to lie low for 10 hours for no particular reason, other than the CIA bigwigs tell them they have to stay off the grid until 6 o'clock that day. Weston is also suffering with angst in a blink-and-you'll-miss-it subplot about the fact he's lied to his girlfriend, played by Nora Arzeneda, about the nature of his work, but it does feel kind of thrown in as an afterthought. And all of this is fine as a film for about 40 minutes or so, after which time things start to slow down for a while. Then there's a bit, some more action for a bit. Then there's a twist straight out of the Hollywood Big Book of Twists. Then things meander for a bit longer, stalling occasionally. And then it ends. For a film with such a simple premise, there's a confusing element in here. Not the machinations of the plot, but in how it was all put together in the way it was. And also in having a number of big names and failing to utilise their talents and letting them sleepwalk through the two-hour running time. When it comes to the cast, well, I was going to see it more for the action rather than the two leads. I've never rated Denzel. Well, Ryan is okay, but doesn't really command leading man status. That said, the best moments came in a couple of brief scenes where they get to talk between themselves, even if Ryan mostly responds by telling Denzel to shut up because he doesn't want to be distracted. On top of that, there's a number of good cast members, but no one really gets to exercise their potential, which is a great shame, especially the usually wonderful Brendan Gleeson, here as CIA bloke David Barlow, who affects an American accent and does nothing to push the boat out. There's also Sam Shepard as CIA Deputy Director Harlan Whitford. Why do we never get the proper CIA director in films? We only get the deputy one. And also Vera Farmiga as Gleeson's colleague Catherine Linklater, who seems to do the least of all. And when I saw Liam Cunningham was also in the cast, I was looking forward to some banter between him and Gleeson, as per the guard. But, alas, Liam only puts in a cameo appearance with his faux posh British accent, and they never get to share screen time or dialogue, which is a great shame. Some other problems with the film? Well, other than it being underwritten and how it keeps stop-starting and should have been cut down to 90 minutes, how that the fights are sloppily directed with the camera work zooming in and out of the action, like the cameraman is just, I don't know, just seems all over the place. And also there's far too much mumbling going on. Whenever I see Safe House again, I'll need to put the subtitles on, as a fair proportion of the dialogue isn't as clear as it should be. Director Daniel Espinosa should really look into that issue before he's let behind a camera again. So there's some good things to it, but it does need a lot of work to be sorted out, really. But the film's as it is, and no one's going to change that now. But so for me, I'd give it a 5 out of 10. So I don't know, your methods may vary. Okay, in a moment we'll have the top 10 movie charts, but first we'll have a bit of music, which is a song which I've heard on Natalie's punk rock show, which is on every Sunday from 5 till 7 on North Manchester FM, so it's fantastic, so do have a listen to that. And this song's called, well, it's by the Stranglers, and it's called Lost in a Supermarket. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was the Stranglers with Lost in a Supermarket, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. In this section, we have a look at the top 10 movie charts, and for as I've said many many times before, I go through the US movie charts there. I mean, they're more interesting anyway. So we start off with Dr. Seuss's The Lorax, which went in straight at number one and took a massive $70.2 million in its opening weekend. In this film, a 12-year-old boy searches for the one thing that will enable him to win the affection of the girl of his dreams. To find it, he must discover the story of the Lorax, the grumpy yet charming creature who fights to protect his world. Starring Danny DeVito as the Lorax, plus Ed Helms, Zac Efron, Taylor Swift, and Betty White. There's no doubt there's a lot of great animation in here, as you can see from the trailer. But as anyone will know who listens to this show, CGI animation films really do not do it for me, so I'm going to be giving this one a miss. If you want to see what the trailer looks like, just go to my Facebook page, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. At number two, we have Project X, which took $21.1 million in its opening weekend. Now, there's a very long and seemingly complex plot in this synopsis link on the Internet Movie Database, but the trailer makes it look like a very average stoner comedy with students trashing a big house and also the fountain for no apparent reason. I was waiting for the twist in the trailer, but there wasn't one. Starring Thomas Mann, Oliver Cooper, and Jonathan Daniel Brown. The title Project X was initially a placeholder for a final title, but interest generated by the secretive title resulted in it being kept. The film was cast through a nationwide open casting call to find the people who had never acted before or who had limited acting experience. The majority of the cast were sourced from this casting call, but a few with prior acting credits, such as Thomas Mann, were accepted after multiple auditions. Filming took place on sets entirely in Los Angeles, California, over 5 weeks, on a $12 million budget, and the movie is presented as a home video from the perspective of an attendee using a camera to document the night's events. But in my view, it still looks absolutely pants. So, yeah, avoid. It's out here soon as well. Don't go and see it. Don't encourage them. Number three, we have Act of Valor, which is an unprecedented blend of real-life heroism and original filmmaking. Act of Valor stars a group of active duty Navy SEALs in a powerful story of contemporary global anti-terrorism. Inspired by true events, the film combines stunning combat sequences, up-to-the-minute battlefield technology, and heart-pumping emotion for the ultimate action adventure. Act of Valor takes audiences deep into the secretive world of the most elite, highly trained group of warriors in the modern world. When the rescue of a kidnapped CIA operative leads to the discovery of a deadly terrorist plot against the US, a team of SEALs is dispatched on a worldwide manhunt. As the valiant men of Bandito Platoon race to stop a coordinated attack that could kill and wound thousands of American civilians, they must balance their commitment to country, team, and their families back home. Each time they accomplish their mission, a new piece of intelligence reveals another shocking twist to the deadly terror plot, which stretches from Chechnya to the Philippines, and from the Ukraine to Somalia. The widening operation sends the SEALs across the globe as they track the terrorist ring to the US-Mexico border, where they engage in an epic firefight with an outcome that has potentially unimaginable consequences for the future of America. Now, sorry, no one famous, that's because the cast are all portrayed by active duty US Navy SEALs. The missions are fictitious, but the weapons and tactics are real. Now, given the look of the film, it comes across as like a movie version of those Sock'em games which are played on the PSP. It does look brilliantly directed, so I'd highly recommend this. Number four, we have Safe House, which you've heard about already. Number five, we've got Good Deeds, which is another... it's a romantic comedy with Tyler Perry and Thandie Newton. And Thandie Newton, yes. Tyler Perry, anything to do with Tyler Perry, no. I got bored with this in the trailer in less than a minute, and you will too. I'm not even going to go into the detail about the film because it's absolute rubbish. Avoid it. Number six, we have Journey to the Mysterious Island. And Sean Anderson accompanies his new stepfather Hank to find his grandfather, Alexander, who went missing while exploring a lost island. With the help of Gabato and Kehlani, they reach the island and find Alexander. After a few harrowing encounters, they escape the island on the submarine Nautilus, returning home. Starring Dwayne Johnson, Vanessa Hudgens and Michael Caine, it's definitely a film for kids. And older blokes who want to see Miss Hudgens looking pretty, pretty hot. Number seven, The Vow. Oh, romantic tosh. A car accident puts Paige, Rachel McAdams, into a coma, and then she wakes up again with severe memory loss. Well, at least you might have forgotten seeing this film. Her husband, Leo, Channing Tatum, who has to work to win her heart again. Now, giving the film 2.5 stars out of 4, Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times found it pleasant enough as a date movie, but that's all. The USA Today wrote that it may appeal to the most rabid fans of tear-jerk romances like The Notebook, but it's a hard-to-swallow maudlin tale. Also starring Jessica Lange and Sam Neill, it looks like a syrupy romantic mess, and I do not want to see it. Excuse me. Something else I don't want to see, number 8, is This Means War, in which two top CIA operatives wage an epic battle against one after another after they discover they are dating the same woman. Starring Tom Hardy and Chris Pine, both fancying Reese Witherspoon, the trailer looks dreadful. And while Tom Hardy is usually worth a watch, I think Chris Pine made a pathetic Captain Kirk in the Star Trek reboot, as did Simon Pegg for Scotty, and the only ones he came across were Zachary Quinto as Spock and Carl Urban as Bones. But I digress. Number 9, we have Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, that's still hanging in there. And it's the second film to be released under the Marvel Knights banner after 2008's Punisher Warzone. And it's directed by Mark Neveline and Brian Taylor, who made Crank, and from a screenplay written by David S. Goyer, Scott Gimple and Seth Hoffman. And it's a sequel to the 2007 film, which features Nicolas Cage returning to the starring role as Johnny Blaze / Ghost Rider. But is there a plot? Well, as Johnny Blaze hides out in Eastern Europe, he is called upon to stop the devil, who is trying to take human form. It also stars Kieran Hines, Idris Elba and Johnny Whitworth. I never saw the original film, but, you know, it's... How do I put it? I mean, I asked on Internet Movie Database whether you needed to see the first one before seeing this, because, as I say, I haven't seen it. But one reply said you don't, because the origin of Ghost Rider is retold at the start of this one. And another reply simply said, no, you don't have to see either of them. But number 10, we have Wanderlust. Rattled by sudden unemployment, a Manhattan couple surveys alternative living options, ultimately deciding to experiment with living on a rural commune where free love rules. A rom-com with Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd, this looks as dull as it sounds, with just one or two minor laughs from innuendo-based material. So, that's enough of that. Okay, I've been in music, and then we'll have the new cinema releases out this Friday. So Lens is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on Manchester's 106.6 with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with 21 Jump Street, in which two underachieving police officers go undercover in a high school in order to bust a drug ring. Now, with the tagline of "The only thing getting blown tonight is their cover," this film stars current hot properties Jonah Hill, The Sitter and Moneyball, and also Channing Tatum, Haywire and The Vow. And the trailer for this has a lot of good laughs in it, so it really does look, you know, well worth a watch. Sounds as a bit of a, you know, daft comedy, but every now and again you need one of them, and this looks like it does the job. Also out we have The Devil Inside, and in Italy a woman becomes involved in a series of unauthorised exorcisms during a mission to discover what happened to her mother, who allegedly murdered 3 people during her own exorcism. They're starring Fernanda Andrade, Simon Quarterman, Evan Helmuth, Iona Grama and Susan Crowley. I've seen the trailer for this a few times now, and it looks like an absolute must-see. There's so many moments of what the... And there's no one famous in the film either, but there's lots of weird stuff going on, including Maria, the mother, literally climbing the walls. It's just totally bizarre, and if you've seen it, you'll know what I mean. Just avoid those horrible TV adverts where they show pictures of the audience going, "Oh, it was so scary! Oh!" Make your own mind up when you go and see it. Don't listen to some idiot who just got in for free because they agreed to be paid to, well, agreed to be filmed afterwards to say, well, a load of utter bunkum. Just, oh, adverts like that annoy me. Just really do. Filmmakers, stop it. It just looks like a focus group gone wrong. Just, oh, bad idea. But anyway, The Devil Inside looks like a good idea, so go and see that. Also this week we have Contraband. A Mark Wahlberg leads the cast of Contraband, an action thriller about a man trying to stay out of a world he worked hard to leave behind and a family he'll do anything to protect. Set in New Orleans, the film explores the cutthroat underground world of international smuggling, full of desperate criminals and corrupt officials, high stakes and big payoffs where loyalty rarely exists and death is one wrong turn away. Ooh. Now Chris Faraday, Wahlberg, long ago abandoned his life of crime, but after his brother-in-law, Andy, Caleb Landry Jones, botches a drug deal for his ruthless boss. Tim Briggs, Giovanni Ribisi, that's right, that's his boss, Tim Briggs, played by Giovanni Ribisi. Chris is forced back into doing what he does best, running contraband, to settle Andy's debt. Chris is a legendary drug smuggler and quickly assembles a crew with the help of his best friend, Sebastian, Ben Foster, to head to Panama and return with millions in counterfeit bills. Things quickly fall apart, and with only hours to reach the cash, Chris must use his rusty skills to successfully navigate a treacherous criminal network of brutal drug lords, cops, and hitmen, before his wife, Kate Beckinsale, and sons become their target. Now, the trailer for this makes it look fairly pedestrian, though not a first choice for the cinema at all, but, if you like seeing Kate Beckinsale, then, maybe it's worth a watch. Also, out this Friday, we have In Darkness, which tells the true story of Leopold Soha, played by Robert Wikiwich, who risks his own life to help save a dozen people from certain death. Initially interested in his own good, the thief and burglar hides Jewish refugees for 14 months in the sewers of the Nazi-occupied town of Lwów in former Poland. I probably pronounced that wrong. It's directed by Agnieszka Holland, who is also responsible for episodes of The Killing, Cold Case, and The Wire, as well as having contributed to a rewriting of Three Colours White and Three Colours Blue. And although it's yet another film set during World War II, it's clear there are still many stories to tell, and this film certainly does look like an intriguing one, so it's well worth a look. Now, one which isn't worth a look is a film which came out before Christmas in America, and now it's finally turned up over here. And it's called We Bought a Zoo. Now, Benjamin Mee, Matt Damon, is recently widowed, and his 14-year-old son, Dylan, is expelled from school. Benjamin decides to begin again in new surroundings, wanting to get away from the sad reminders of his deceased wife. He finally buys a large house with a zoo in the backyard, and at first reluctant to take on the zoo with its animals, he decides to give it a try. Although his young daughter, 7-year-old Rosie, is happy with the animals, Dylan is unhappy and retreats into his artwork. Benjamin meets the staff of the zoo, headed by the attractive Kelly Foster, played by Scarlett Johansson. How convenient. They must meet stringent requirements in order to open in the summer and proceed to work to upgrade the zoo's facilities. The zoo runs into trouble when Benjamin's bank account starts to run out of money. The morale of the workers starts to dip as they think that Benjamin will sell the property away like the previous owner. Benjamin miraculously discovered that his late wife had an investment account with instructions for Benjamin to use the money wisely while listening to his heart and ignoring his older brother. This discovery lifted the spirits of the zoo's workers. When Dylan is having relationship problems with a girl called Lily, Benjamin gives his son advice on reconciling with her, saying that he just needed 20 seconds of insane courage. The film stars Matt Damon and Scarlett Johansson and comes from Cameron Crowe, the director of Jerry Maguire, but based on the trailer, it starts off okay with a bit of humour, but soon it falls apart into schmaltzy rubbish, so I'll be giving this one a big miss, I think. If you want to see the trailers for any of those, just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show, DVD Fever Show even. And in a moment we'll have a look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, including Decoy Bride. But first of all, have a bit of music, and then some DVDs. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on Manchester 106.6. I'm Don Robinson. And now we're going to have a look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, starting with The Decoy Bride, which is only on just DVD. I would have thought this would get a Blu-ray release. It, most things seem to. Anyway, When the world's media descends on the remote Scottish island, where a Hollywood actress is attempting to get married, a local girl is hired as a decoy bride to put the paparazzi off the scent. Starring Kelly MacDonald and Alice Eve, David Tennant, Dylan Moran and Sally Phillips, the trailer is 100% predictable, but seems to play out with a certain charm that makes it look like a good laugh. It looks like it's only getting a limited cinema release as well, because it came out at the cinema last Friday, then it's straight onto DVD this week. Very, very weird. What's just never going away is Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, and it's highly anticipated fourth installment of the Twilight Saga, directed by Academy Award winner Bill Condon. The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, blah blah blah, reveals the mysteries of this romantic epic that's entranced millions. Bella, Kristen Stewart, and Edward, Robert Pattinson, plus those who they love, must deal with a chain of consequences brought on by a marriage, honeymoon, and the tumultuous birth of a child, which brings an unforeseen and shocking development for Jacob Black, Taylor Lautner. With more of the romance, passion, intrigue, and action that made Twilight and all the others blockbusters, this film, based on Stephanie Meyer's best-selling book series, begins the conclusion of the tale of vampire love. Oh, conclusion! So it's finally going away. Can flip for that. Conclusion of the tale of vampire love, boundless friendship, acceptance, and finding your true self, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I've never seen a Twilight film in my life. Does that surprise you? Nor do I have any inclination to do so, including this one. In the trailer, man turns into a wolf just as Bella is about to marry her man. But let's face it, it's not going to change anything. If you love the Twilight books and films, and are probably a teenage girl, then you'll see it regardless of what I say. The end. No, not quite the end, because on this release there's some special features. There's an audio commentary from the director. There's UK premiere footage. There's Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart in uncut nude scenes. I'm only joking. There's a couple of featurettes with Edward and Jacob and Jacob's destiny. And filming of the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1, A New Beginning, The Wedding, The Honeymoon. The end. Also out this week we have The Help, which I've equally zero interest in seeing. And this number one New York Times bestseller by Catherine Stockett comes to vivid life through the powerful performances of a phenomenal ensemble cast led by Emma Stone. Fair enough, she's attractive. Academy Award nominated, I think she won it actually, didn't she? Viola Davis, Octavia Spencer and Bryce Dallas Howard. The Help is an inspirational, courageous and empowering story about very different and extraordinary women in the 1960s South who build an unlikely friendship around a secret writing project, one that breaks society's rules and puts them all at risk. Filled with poignancy, humour and hope, and complete with compelling never-before-seen bonus features, wow, The Help is a timeless, universal and triumphant story about the ability to create change, but Watching the trailer, it looks like a typical life-affirming chick flick where everything first goes wrong and then eventually goes right, and everything in the garden is rosy. Sickly sweet American junk. Avoid like the plague. Some special features. We have The Making of The Help, From Friendship to Film, although they really shouldn't have bothered. In their own words, a tribute to the Maids of Mississippi. The deleted scenes with introductions by director Tate Taylor. Senators, who names, if you surname's Tate, why name the... His name's Taylor. Why name your child Tate? I mean, it's alliteration. Just, you should really try and avoid it, especially with names. I remember seeing a book written by, who was it now? I think it was a geography book when I was a kid. And the guy's name who wrote it was Martin Martin. His parents must have hated him, and he must have hated his parents. But I digress. Anyway, these are sons. There are several of them. And also a Living Proof music video. Okay, we have a bit of music and then we'll have some more DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on North Manchester FM 106.6 with me, Dom Robinson. In this section, we continue a look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, starting with Jane Eyre. And in the 19th century set story, Jane Eyre, Mia Wasikowska, suddenly flees Thornfield Hall, the vast and isolated estate where she works as a governess for Adele Varennes, a child under the custody of Thornfield's brooding master, Edward Rochester, Michael Fassbender. The imposing residence, and Rochester's own imposing nature, have sorely tested her resilience. With nowhere else to go, she is extended a helping hand by clergyman St. John Rivers, Jamie Bell, and his family. As she recuperates in Rivers' In the river's Moor House, and looks back upon the tumultuous events that led to her escape, Jane wonders if the past is ever truly past. It also stars Sally Hawkins, Imogen Poots, and Judi Dench, and period dramas aren't really my bag, and the trailer for this makes me feel that this is not going to be any exception. But if it's for you, then the special features on this disc include a director's commentary, deleted scenes, a look inside Jane Eyre, probably not literally, to score Jane Eyre, Cary Fukunaga and Dario Marinelli team up, and The Mysterious Light of Jane Eyre. Also out this week we have Love Never Dies. It says, experience in glorious high definition the breathtaking new production of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Love Never Dies and continue the story of the Phantom of the Opera. Set 10 years later, the Phantom has escaped from Paris to New York, where he lives amongst the joyrides and freak shows of Coney Island. He has finally found a place for his music to soar. All that is missing is his love, Christine Day. In a bid to win back her love, the Phantom lures Christine, her husband Raoul, and the young son, Gustavi, from Manhattan to the glittering and glorious world of Coney Island. They have no idea what lies in store for them. You haven't truly experienced Andrew Lloyd Webber's Love Never Dies until you see the spectacular new Australian production filmed at Melbourne's iconic Regent Theatre, it says here. And bonus features include a making of. It's clearly released in time for Mother's Day, because it's the kind of thing they watch, whereas most people will avoid it. Also this week we have My Week with Marilyn, which is the true story of a starstruck boy who falls in love with the biggest celebrity in the world, Marilyn Monroe. 23-year-old Colin Clark was determined to break into the film business, and his first job was The Prince and the Showgirl, the film that was set to be the smash hit of the year, famously uniting the biggest stars of the day, Marilyn Monroe and Sir Laurence Olivier. On honeymoon in Britain with a new husband, Arthur Miller, Marilyn is excited about the project, but quickly becomes desperate to run away from a Hollywood entourage, the pressures of work, and the press who hound her. For Marilyn, Colin is a welcome antidote, and he offers her everything she craves, when, together, they escape the film set to get closer in an idyllic Britain. Now, watching the trailer, it looks pretty dull, and I can't think of anything to recommend it, but I was never a fan of Marilyn Monroe anyway, so perhaps it's only for those who give a hoot about her life. And if you do, then the special features include the untold story of an American icon and director's commentary. Excuse me. Some of the new releases out this week, we have The Big Bang. dear. Monte Carlo, which isn't some exciting action film, it sounds like some dross for teenagers. Parked with Cohen Meany. The 2011 version remake of Straw Dogs, which no one seemed to like, although I thought even the original was pretty dull, to be honest. Special Forces and Wreckers. TV series and various other things out this week include 30 Rock Season 5, Alfie the Bring Him Home Tour, keep him away I'd say, Call the Midwife, if they must, Cannon and Ball Series 4, Frank Carson Live, Hale and Pace Series 1, Happy Endings Season 1, Lady Killers Series 1, Mad Dogs Series 2, One More, Prisoners' Wives, Sirens, Series 1, Stella, actually all the Series 1 as well, The Sullivans, Volume 1, which is Episodes 1 to 50, which is the thing my grandma absolutely loved, and the opening credits always used to amuse me as a kid, with some guy making a funny face in the photo. Anyway, This is England 88, which is also out on Blu-ray and DVD together, as is the original This is England TV series, Whitechapel Series 3, and Wilfred Season 1. And just one Blu-ray premiere this week, The Bodyguard, obviously following what happened to Whitney Houston. So we're gonna, that's the end of the first hour, and in the second hour we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with a review of Unit 13 on the PlayStation Vita, plus the Top 10 Games charts. First of all, I have a bit of music, and I heard this song in it's a film-related tune, but I heard this song in, it was on an advert, sung by someone else. I thought I'd dig out the original, and it's just cheesy as hell, but it's just it's quite sweet, isn't it? It's Dick Van Dyke and Huckabye Mountain, Hushabye Mountain from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. That was Yes with Big Generator, and in this second hour, we'll have a look at everything to do with video games and TV, starting with a review of Unit 13 on the PlayStation Vita. Then we have the Top 10 Games charts, some new video games releases, and some video games news. Then in the second half hour, we'll have a look at some TV watching the past week, including, what did I watch? The Sarah Millican television programme. Oh dear. I'll look at some more programmes coming up, which are hopefully worth watching. And a new section, Mashup Madness. Will it be any good? Have a listen. Tell me. Here we go. First of all, we have the look at the video games review, starting with a review of Unit 13, which is the best game I've played on the Sony PlayStation Vita so far. Now, there's lots of shooting and violence as you take part in one of the elite military types reportedly recruited from one of the best military outfits across the USA and Europe. But given how it's actually you controlling them, then if you're new to the game, you're really going to get your bottom kicked big time until you figure out what to do and where to go. As you go after the baddies by playing one of six soldier classes: infiltrator, sniper, soldier, technician, point man, or support. Now, the touchscreen really comes into its own here when it comes to using it to throw a grenade or tapping the sight of your weapon on your weapon to look through it, picking up weapons, reloading, as well as leaping over barriers. Now, this allows the controls to stay focused on the basics of what they have to do, and also ensures you don't have too many buttons to worry about pressing in the heat of battle. In this game, you walk about, collect specific items, shoot baddies, hunker down behind crates to keep hidden from the baddies. But be careful though, because it doesn't take many shots to kill you, just as it doesn't take many to kill a baddie. Which is good compared to other games, because they just tend to just let them fire millions at you before you even start to die. But on certain missions, you need to remain undetected, so if you are spotted, make sure you cap them all before they can raise the alarm. Oh, don't forget you get additional points for a clean headshot rather than a straightforward kill. There are 36 missions shown in a grid of 9x4, so once you complete the top left one, you can go across or down to try more. You know, you don't have to complete them all in any strict order. I also love the fact that it takes almost no time at all to regenerate you, so to speak, when you die. There's no long loading times like some games and other units do, so I'm glad we're in the realm of memory cards instead of those UMD discs now. So yeah, Unit 13, if you have got PlayStation Vita, and I had one for a little while, hoping to get it back soon, then I'll get this game. It's just absolutely fantastic. I'm going to give this one a massive 5 out of 5. Okay, so have a look at a bit of music now, and then we're going to have the top 10 games charts. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we have a look at the top 10 video games charts, starting with, well, that'd be the number one, obviously. And going straight into number one, we have SSX, which is one of those snowboarding games, and I'm really hoping to get a copy of that for review, and I'll bring you that as soon as I get it, hopefully. Number two, we have FIFA 12. Number three, it's a new entry for Mario Party 9. Number four, it's down for Uncharted Golden Abyss. Number five, Mario and Sonic, the London 2012 Olympic Games. Number six, UFC Undisputed 3. Number seven, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number 8, FIFA Football. Number 9, Assassin's Creed Revelations. And number 10, Battlefield 3. So some new entries out this week. Well, been out for a while, obviously. I'll be going back into the charts. Number 34, Sonic Generations. 35, The Sims 3. Number 36, Skate 3. Number 37, The Sims 3 Pets. Number 38, Dead Island. And number 40, Cars 2. Some new video games releases out this Friday. Although one or two of these may be out already, but I didn't do any new releases like last week because I did that review of the PlayStation Vita. So a bit of a sort of best of both, really, because it's not a great deal out between the two. But the main one is Mass Effect 3 on the Xbox 360, PS3 and PC. Now, not everyone will survive. An ancient alien race known only as the Reapers has launched an all-out invasion, leaving nothing but a trail of destruction in their wake. Earth has been taken, the galaxy is on the verge of total annihilation, and you're the only one who can stop them. The price of failure is extinction. You are Commander Shepard, a character that you can forge in your own image. You will determine how events play out, which planets to explore, and whom to form alliances with, as you rally a force to eliminate the Reaper threat once and for all. How you wage this war is completely up to you. Go into combat with guns blazing, or use cover to plan a more tactical assault. Utilise your squad to full effect, or take a lone wolf approach. Rain death from a distance, or go toe-to-toe with enemies using devastating melee attacks. Mass Effect 3 will react to each decision as you play through a truly unique experience of your own creation. Now, I mean, this one really isn't for me because I don't go in for games with an RPG or like a role playing game element to them. Even though this is a third person shooter, which is the kind of thing I do like. But I don't know, it just when I'm shooting things, I want to be shooting things that look like, it's gonna sound bad, this, things that look like real people. Like a game of Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto. If you're just shooting silly aliens that look like they've been dreamt after eating an entire block of very mature cheddar, then it's just lazy, to be honest. Don't like them. Also this week we have Street Fighter X Tekken on the Xbox 360 and PS3. And it says the long-awaited dream matchup between the two leaders in the fighting genre becomes a reality. The game delivers the ultimate tag team matchup, featuring iconic characters from each franchise and one of the most robust character lineups in fighting game history. With the addition of new gameplay mechanics, the acclaimed fighting engine from Street Fighter 4 has been refined to suit the needs of both Street Fighter and Tekken players alike. Features include a dream matchup with dozens of playable characters, including Rolento, Zangief, Kami, Sagat, Hugo, Ibuki, Poison, Dhalsim, Ryu, Ken, Guile, Abel and Chun-Li from Street Fighter, deep breath, as well as, no, there is one called Deep Breath, as well as Hayachi, Lily, Julia, Huang, Raven, Kuma, Yoshimitsu, Steve, Kazuya, Nina, King, Marduk, and Bob. Bob from Tekken. Why can they all be all called Bob? It's damn sight easier. Real-time tag battle, you can fight as a team of two and switch between characters strategically. Briefing room where you get your combos and timing just right with help from friends in an online training mode, and there's lots of other modes. It's just like loads. So if you're a fan of these games, then just you're gonna love this kind of game basically. And also this week they have FIFA Street, which it says is a fun, authentic street football game that replicates the way the game is played all over the world. From the creators of the award-winning EA Sports FIFA franchise and inspired by street footballers from around the world, FIFA Street is the most authentic street football game ever made. Enjoy a unique, fun experience where everything from the environments to the gear to the music is true to the street football and its culture. Powered by the revolutionary FIFA gameplay engine and introducing street ball control, FIFA Street delivers an arsenal of groundbreaking street dribbling styles and trick moves that ignite the one-on-one battles. Whether performing one panner after another without breaking a sweat in the way the game is played in Amsterdam, or a physical fight for possession style, the way the players compete in London, the fans will enjoy a superior fidelity of ball control, so could do make sure you control your balls, and responsiveness from anything ever experienced. Compete everywhere from parking lots and parks to prestigious 5x5 futsal style tournaments in the world's biggest cities. Play with and against the stars of the most popular clubs of the world, or real-life street players, and compete at more than 35 locations around the world. Okay, that's all your video games releases and the charts for this week, and have a bit more music, and then we'll have a look at the video games news for this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on Manchester's 106.6 with me, Dom Robinson, and in this section we have a look at the video games news out this week, starting with the news that the Metal Gear Solid HD Collection has been announced for the PlayStation Vita. And Konami's collection will bring enhanced versions of Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty and Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater to the Sony handheld. The collection was previously released for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, with PSP original Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker bundled in alongside the two games. The PlayStation Vita will provide fans with an exciting new way to enjoy the Metal Gear Solid HD collection, said Martin Schneider, General Manager for Konami Digital. I'm confident that new users will be pleased with new innovations from Kojima Productions that have been implemented with new PlayStation Vita iterations, offering a new, truly unique experience for this exciting new format. Both games, including in the pack, will feature improved graphics, trophy support, and controls optimized for the Vita hardware. Players will also be able to transfer data between the console and the PS3, and it'll be out for the PlayStation Vita this summer. Also the news that Mass Effect 3 has shipped 3.5 million copies worldwide, making it the biggest launch of 2012. Publisher EA hailed the launch as the first pop culture event and the biggest entertainment launch of the year. The action role-playing game went on sale in North America and across Europe, and BioWare co-founder Dr. Ray Mosaica said, "We've been truly humbled by the amazing response from fans and critics for Mass Effect 3. The game is a gripping, engaging experience, where the decisions and choices you make will truly stay with you for the months and years ahead." He added, "We are all incredibly proud of creative director Casey Hudson and the teams in Edmonton and Montreal for delivering the best game BioWare has ever made." Pre-orders for the title were said to be well ahead of its processor. However, it's been thought that sales could be down after it was revealed that game would not stock any future releases by EA. And we lead on to that news that the game management have been told to prepare for administration within weeks. Earlier last week, CEO Ian Shepherd told senior staff that the retail group, which includes Game and GameStation, has just 2 weeks to save itself. There are still hopes that a buyer, such as US chain GameStop, will emerge to take over the chain. On Friday, game stores across the country initiated a fire sale, where certain stock was sold at low prices, a move which is assumed to keep the group afloat for a few more days. I did look on their website for a couple of things, but they were like down, showing as selling for like £1.98, but just obviously out of stock. Obviously, it's been emerged that Mass Effect 3 and future EA titles will not be stocked at Game, and the chain recently announced 35 store closures, and that it's going to shut a sister website, gameplay.co.uk. Gameplay recently received lender support to alleviate financial troubles following apparent concern by publisher EA. So, it's unfortunate, another unfortunate sign of the recession that the writing's on the wall. But on to other news, the new Xbox won't have a disc drive and is launching in 2013. I'm not convinced, well, not about the date, but not convinced about the not having a disc drive. It says Microsoft's next console will instead use interchangeable solid-state card storage, which could be Microsoft's own proprietary format, or something established such as SD cards. The console is also reportedly confirmed to launch in 2013, but an announcement could still arrive later this year. Microsoft has been briefing development and publishing partners about the system under one of its strictest non-disclosure agreements that they've encountered. The move away from disk-based storage and towards cards and digital downloads for a home console would be a problem for struggling retail chains such as Game. Microsoft said in response to the report, "Xbox 360 has found new ways to extend its life cycle, like introducing the world to controller-free experiences with Kinect, and reinventing the console with a new dashboard and new entertainment content partnerships. We're always thinking about what to do for our next platform and how to continue to defy the life cycle convention. Beyond that, we do not comment on rumours or speculation." A recent rumour suggested that the Xbox 720 will be 6 times more powerful than the current 360 and that it will use Blu-ray discs instead of DVDs. That's fair enough. I think I'll still use my Blu-ray player for watching films, because the Xbox... I mean, I've got an HD DVD player, because I got them when they were dead cheap on Amazon. The quality is the same as Blu-ray, basically, and the discs are dead cheap on Amazon as well. But the machine's just so noisy while you're watching them. Anyway, previous reports have said that Microsoft's next console will launch in two different editions. One of the rumoured editions, codenamed Loop, will be far cheaper and more focused on the Kinect system. And the new Xbox is expected to be announced at the E3 in June. Okay, that's everything to do with video games for this week. And we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on Manchester's 106.6. And this section we look all about, this last half hour, we look at everything to do with TV, starting with a review of TV programmes watched in the past week. And we start with the Sarah Millican television programme, which is on every Thursday on BBC Two at 10 o'clock. And award-winning Sarah Millican talks television, combining brilliant stand-up inspired by what she's seen on screen and unique interviews with television people who have impressed her. Sarah explores wildlife and dating programmes and meets naturalist, not naturist, Chris Packham, well, he may be a naturist, you never know, from Springwatch, and sexpert Tracy Cox. Well, I managed about 15 minutes of this. It was basically a case of Sarah makes cheap, obvious wisecrack, usually about how men are rubbish. Then she looks to the audience for approval, and repeat. I'm not a fan of hers at the best of times, but this was really nothing to shout about. No doubt, however, it's going to run and run for years, because it's just, you know, it's the kind of thing that TV producers just lap up. I mean, it's absolute tosh, it really is. They should be ashamed of themselves. What has been absolutely fantastic, and it's been the best thing on TV in recent weeks, is something I haven't mentioned before. Doctors, the daytime soap on BBC One at 1:45 on weekdays. Apart from the occasional nonsense storyline, there's been a very powerful one involving Dr. Heston Carter, played by the fabulous Owen Brenman, where he's been in a massive amount of denial about the fact that his girlfriend, Marina, has been beating him up. Now, from an early start, we knew that she had anger management issues, but occasionally she would get really nasty and just start laying into him, suddenly, so sometimes resulting in him running out of the house with unexplained cuts and bruises, and once even a knife wound on his arm. It all came to a head last week as she beat him about the head with a pepper grinder, and the truth came out to his colleagues. Now, I'd like to think that Owen Brenman will get nominated for like a Best Actor award at the National TV Awards, but sadly I doubt that'll happen, as they only ever go for primetime junk like Corrie, EastEnders and Emmerdale, which was a great shame. I mean, just this, I don't watch any of those primetime ones. I rarely used to watch Corrie. I did watch EastEnders for a few years. Oh God, Hollyoaks, that's always in there as well. I never watched Emmerdale. Not my bag at all, but they're just all, from what I've seen, they just don't seem much of a muchness, and they just copy each other's storylines, whereas Doctors really stands out on its own. So, yeah, scrap those, watch Doctors, and let's hope he does get an award anyway. Now, I was going to talk about Pramface as well, but I've still not got around to watching it yet, apart from about 10 minutes when it was far too late, and I just didn't really get to see a lot of it. So I will try to resolve that soon, you know, and bring that back for you. Okay, but that's all our TV programmes, well, watching the past week. There's not been a great deal, to be honest, because there's nothing particularly new that's of interest. But got some new stuff that's coming up in the coming week, and a bit of music then, and then we'll have those programmes. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on Manchester's 106.6 with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we're going to have a look at the programmes that are coming up in the coming week. Now, I'm going to start off with one which, well, technically it's not on in the coming week, so why am I mentioning it? Well, because it was on last night, but I've not had time to see it yet. But it does get a repeat on week on Wednesday, as I can mention it next week as well, so I will do as a reminder. And it's called My Phone Sex Secrets. And as Britain experiences the worst recession since the war, over 1 million women are out of work. Drastic times call for drastic measures. My Phone Sex Secrets, not mine, uncovers at least one British industry that's burgeoning, phone sex. Meeting the women who are paid to talk dirty. Gone are the clichés of bored housewives earning pin money. Instead, getting in on the act are young, single, married, older and educated women. The programme features first-time recruit Rosa. And after weeks of unsuccessful job hunting, the student believes that phone sex may hold the key to getting back in the black. Sounds interesting, but I'm certainly not paying for it. Pardon the pun. Also on this week we have Letting Go, which is on BBC One tonight at 10:35. It's a documentary. And having a child leave home is difficult enough for any parent, but when your teenage daughter has Down syndrome, it's even harder. Dominica Lawson, nearly 16, is unsettled at the prospect of having to leave home. But it is her mother, Rosa Monckton, who is faced with the challenge of planning for the future. Letting Go follows Rosa and her daughter as she leaves school and takes her first steps into the adult world. Rosa also meets three other young people with learning disabilities and discovers how they are managing their transition to greater independence. Jess Hiles has a rare genetic disorder, and she and her parents have discovered that living alone does not mean living independently. Richard Sherrett's learning disabilities meant that, despite having significant support from carers, he has had to return home. Jack Hale from Devon is a year older than Rosa's daughter and also has Down syndrome. And his mother is reluctant to limit his horizons and encourages his ambitions to be a DJ. Also on this coming week, we have Love Life, which is a new series on ITV every Thursday at 9 o'clock, where Joe returns home from a year abroad and is shocked to find that the girl he loves is pregnant. Lucy has told no one who the father is, but Joe discovers it's her married boss, Dominic. Not me! Whose wife, Penny, is having trouble conceiving. Joe confronts him, but Dominic has no idea Lucy is pregnant. All four lives are thrown into turmoil. And then the baby arrives. Starring Rob James Collier, Andrea Lowe, Alexander Armstrong, who's in everything, Sophie Thompson, Gregor Fisher, and Kieran O'Brien. This actually looks pretty interesting. Normally I don't really go for ITV dramas, but it can either be really, really good, or just another of those dramas for women, which is what TV producers and you know schedulers try to aim for these days. There's very little for blokes these days. That said, if you're a fan of it, Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares USA returns on Channel 4 on Monday at 10 o'clock. And the new series on Kitchen Nightmares USA sees Gordon Ramsay travelling around the United States to rescue restaurants in peril. This week's explosive opening episode finds Gordon in Plainfield, New Jersey, trying to save a floundering soul food restaurant called Blackberry's. He comes up against the indomitable Shelley, an owner who runs her establishment with an iron fist, and doesn't want to hear what Gordon has to say. Shelley's refusal to deal with the truth reaches fever pitch when Gordon discovers a dead mouse in the doorway. Gordon must find a way to break through to Shelley to convince her to change the ways if a restaurant is going to stand a chance. Now, I used to really like this programme, but it just really lost its way. Every episode just ended up being exactly the same. And then that's pretty much always how it's been, but once you watched a couple of series, you just get a bit overfaced with it all. It's a bit like having a big meal, you know. Have enough to keep you going, and then that's enough. Don't just have more and more and more and more until you're just sick of the whole damn thing, basically. Now, it's also, I will mention this next week as well, but something for the weekend is becoming Sunday brunch. Because finally this week sees the very last something for the weekend after 6 years with Tim Lovejoy and Simon Rimmer. Then next Sunday at 10 a.m, there's Sunday brunch with Tim Lovejoy and Simon Rimmer, this time on Channel 4. There's no Louise, but then she was clearly put on what they call gardening leave. She disappeared the week after it was announced that she would not be on the new show. Yes, she'd been away for far too many holidays, as regular viewers will know, but they'd made no mention of the disappearance this time, so it was obvious that she'd been ditched in advance of the new show as they tried to sort of prepare for the changeover, as it were. But I'm glad that they are taking it on. I think the commissioning guy at Channel 4 called Dominic Lord, who I think that's his name, he's just one of the few people in TV who actually seems to have common sense. Precious few, that's for sure. And I thought, when I heard they were possibly going to take it over, because it was rumoured that ITV would, I thought, you know, as soon as one channel takes over another programme, sometimes it's not very good. But then again, it's going to be the same production company, so it'll be the same studio, so nothing will change, probably, apart from the set. But also, I thought, well, they're probably not going to have it on TV until the autumn. But bang, they're just putting it on the week after it finishes on BBC Two. So that's absolutely fantastic news. It's absolute rubbish. The programme is just absolute rubbish. I make it sound like Gerald Ratner now, in a way, but it's just entertaining rubbish. And it's just, you need a bit of guff on a Sunday morning just to, you know, wake up with, because it's just fantastic nonsense. So that's stuff to look forward to in the coming week. And after this, I have a new section called Mashup Madness, where I talk about the mashup videos I do on YouTube. So I'm going to play one of them next. So have a bit of music, and then we'll have that. It's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, with me, Dom Robinson, for the final section this week on North Manchester FM 106.6. And this final section, rather than a bit of TV news, we're going to try something called Mashup Madness. Now, one thing I like to do is make mashup videos, usually made up from several different TV shows and lasting around 1 or 2 minutes. I've also had some of them featured on XFM Manchester's Breakfast Show with Tim Cocker and Jim Bob. And last September, one of them was also on RudeTube, for which the polite title was Snooker Loopy. But following on from a comment from Dennis Taylor about one of player Mark Allen's little traits, the full title became Snooker Loopy, Fist Pumping in the Commentary Box. Which does sound a bit rude, but he does, as Dennis Taylor says, Mark Allen does a little fist pump when he, you know, does a really good shot. And Dennis Taylor was sort of asking Willie Taylor if he likes fist pumping in the commentary box. So I'm talking myself into a corner, because it's getting ruder than it actually is. But anyway, following on from my mention of doctors earlier on, today I'm going to play the audio from what I call Brian Blessed and the Dirty Doctors, partly comprised of footage from an episode in which the great loudmouth legend appeared. Now, these are generally a kind of visual thing, but you know, have a listen and let me know what you think about how it fares on the radio. And if it works, I'll play some more. So here we go. It's Brian Blessed and the Dirty Doctors.
An evening of staring at men's danglies.
A
I just want to do it.
I had this weird feeling welling up inside of me.
Oh, dear.
In my experience, boys who boast about their big cars seldom deliver a satisfactory ride.
There's a lot of action next door.
Delicious, delectable, lighting up a room.
Divert your eyes while I get out my tool.
You've been fiddling with this, haven't you?
I've always been a squeezer.
Dirty boy.
Oh, I do like a forceful woman.
I intend to grab by the genitals and squeeze them extremely hard.
I beg your pardon.
Where was I?
I'm interested in bums.
It's pornography. As good as.
I'm not showing my lady garden off to the public, especially as the lawn hasn't been mown in weeks.
I've got a lot of growth in that area.
Well, any chance of intimacy, and I have to grab it.
Oh, I don't think Robin let me do it bareback.
But I can manage!
My, someone's Mr. Feisty today.
He saw me in another man's house with my clothes off.
Oh, that's very nice.
Look, do you want to have sex or not?
No! Never have been.
He has cancelled. Oh, shame. I was hoping to coax him onto a beanbag.
Do you have a problem taking orders from a woman?
You are a very naughty boy.
Oh, where are we going?
Time for me to take you somewhere nice.
In bums, bums, bums.
Never saw that coming.
Okay, so there you have it, Brian Blessed and the Dirty Doctors. Let me know how it fares as something on the radio, and as I said, if it's good, I'll do some more. For now, though, that's everything for this week, so thanks to everyone who listened, and check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, and I'll be back next week for some more movies, games and TV on the DVD Fever Show, me, Dom Robinson. So we'll finish with one last song, and it's going to be probably not talking about video games, but it's going to be The Cardigans and My Favourite Game. Oh, Alan Partridge, eat your heart out. 106.6.
106.6.